That's what the Bible says. Learn how to get wisdom and apply it to every situation of your life on today's Wisdom Works Mid-Morning with Lynn Ford and Dr. Mitchell Cruz.
Oh, my God.
Hello and welcome to this Tuesday Wisdom Works Mid-Morning. I'm Lynn Ford. Our thanks go out to Canine Companion, 11652 North, 825 West in Huntington, for helping to underwrite the first portion of our program. We appreciate Canine Companion and their support of the WBCO radio network. What are you doing, Mitch?
My pen died, so I'm preparing a service for him right now.
Did you have like a thought that you needed to write down because it was so important to
yes.
be... Okay. Well, and there's a whole thing of pens right there.
I'm so glad. It will never run dry.
Before we get to today's conversation with Dr. Mitchell Cruz, I want to remind you about WBCL's Hams It Up for the Holidays outreach to benefit area food banks. As you know, we're out and about today. Got to tell you, yesterday's collections of hams and cash donations went to the Fort Wayne's Community Harvest Food Bank, which services nine counties. What a great day to be out. So wonderful to meet many of you and hear your stories. And your hearts are just touched by those people that you know will not have much to eat this holiday season and beyond and wanted to participate and brought your hams and your cash donations. And I told this story yesterday, but I think it just epitomizes the heart of what this is all about. That when Jamie and I and Karen Richards from the food bank were out at the north end of town on DuPont Road in the parking lot at the Kroger store, this gentleman came up and he was dressed not shabbily, but his clothes were a bit worn, and he was probably in his late 40s. And he said last year at this time, he needed the food bank. He needed what the food bank could offer him because of what life was like for him. And he said, I'm not doing a whole lot better, but I'm doing better than last year, and I just have to participate. So we gave a ham, and he gave some cash, and he walked away. And I thought, you know, this man didn't wait until life was really sunny for him, that he had a lot of money in his pocket before he got involved. He just knew how much of a difference the food bank made for him, really, in surviving last year. And he wanted to make sure that nobody else or somebody else wouldn't be where he was and not be able to get help. So we thank all of you for participating in this project and knowing that wherever you're giving your hams and cash, they stay in that area, which I think is fabulous. So yesterday's collection will stay with Fort Wayne's Community Harvest Food Bank and be used in this area. Today, we're in the 94.7 area until 6 at two locations, 1500 South Centerville Road in Sturgis, Michigan, in the parking lot by the Sturgis Walmart Supercenter, and at 800 East Chicago Street in Coldwater, in the parking lot by the Coldwater Walmart Supercenter. So until 6 o'clock today, taking fresh and canned hams or your cash donations, and they will all stay in that area for the food bank there. You can drop off your fresh or canned hams or that monetary donation until 6 o'clock, and all of those things will go to the Food Bank of South Central Michigan. And then Wednesday, we're in 89.5 territory in Defiance and Archbold, and then we wrap up Thursday in the 88.1 area in Lima and Salina. And for details about this outreach project that helps with the very basic need of food, go to WBCL.org. And as you count and celebrate your blessings this Thanksgiving, your family and your friends, and boy, we're even more thankful and aware of the blessing of a house and a job and food. May your gratitude transform itself into a tangible gift of food that shows someone in need the care, concern, and provision of God. Thank you so very much. Dr. Mitchell Cruz joins us the third Tuesday of each month for what we call a Wisdom Works Mid-Morning, though in December, we're bumping him up. He's on a Monday, December 8th. Mitch has a knack for connecting the Word of God to the stuff of life. And this year he's focused on what he calls Solomon's 12 words to the wise, found in the first chapter of the book of Proverbs. And you can check out the previous 9 words discussed by going to WBCL.org and clicking on Mid-Morning. And you'll also find the worksheets and the audio for each show, and you'll find today's worksheet there as well. Good morning, Dr. Mitchell Cruz.
Good morning. I'm switching my calendars, and you just put me in a panic.
Why?
December 8th? I know I put it in the old one.
Yes, but, you're early next
and
month.
That's a Monday?
Yes.
Okay, I'll just write that down.
Because you were kind enough to switch with Dr. Ann Kaltz, who needs to move later in the month. So she's going to be on Tuesday the 16th, and you're going to be on Monday the 8th. Woo-hoo. Please be here.
I will.
Because this month for Dr. Ann, when we called her, Dr. Ann is based, out of South Carolina. She's done a monthly show with us for, this is, I think, her third year with us. And she's never missed a show. She's never been sick. She's never forgotten a date. So at 9 o'clock last Monday, I think it was, I call her office and I get her administrative assistant. And Jane seemed a bit surprised to hear from me. And I thought, that's kind of odd, you know? And I said, we were just kind of chatting, doing small talk. And normally Jane says, you know, are you ready for Dr. Ann? She puts me through. Well, our small talk sort of petered out, and I thought, this is kind of strange. And she said, do you want Dr. Ann? And I said, yes. And she said, she's in Cancun.
Oh, my.
So Dr. Ann had forgotten, and then I got this email from her the next day saying, I am so, so sorry.
Oh, my.
We got a mix-up on our calendar. So anyway, just to know that you're on December 8th, Dr. Ann's on December 16th.
Thank you. Thank you, Ramon Shaggy.
Yes. So get that on your calendar and be here.
Okay.
Or be square. In some of our discussions on previous shows, Mitch, I've had to ask you to sort of clearly explain the relation. No, wait a minute. No, I mean this in a good way. The number one rule in interviewing is to make your guest immediately feel comfortable.
I'm comfortable.
But, you know, we're going through these 12 words, and sometimes I've had to say, okay, make the connection between that word and our listeners. So take the word justice and make the connection between the daily life of a student or a mom of two kids or a grandmother or whatever. But today's word, I don't think, requires you paving a path for us. I mean, it's immediate. In our understanding. And the word for today is discipline. Explain what it is. And I want you to explain how it differs from punishment, because we use those words interchangeably, and they are not the same thing.
They're not the same thing. In a nutshell, discipline is formative. Punishment is reformative.
Say it again.
Discipline is formative.
Okay.
Punishment is reformative. Punishment is a subset of discipline. Kind of two layers down subset. Discipline is so much more of the picture of an athlete, of what the athlete's going to do to excel and to grow, and all these positives that come into it. We see discipline almost synonymous with punishment.
We do, and if it's such a good thing, why have we gotten such a negative and uncomfortable sort of attitude toward it? Because if you say, you know, you're going to be disciplined, I won't ever step up to the line and say, please. I'm sorry. I'm seriously.
But we like the word, I think we like the word self-discipline, the hyphenated word self-discipline, don't we? And so I think that's the thing. We feel like discipline is coming from someone else against our will, and it's because we did something bad.
And it says something is wrong with us.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And I think mainly the majority of this the ideas we're going to see is it's not against our will. It's because of it. We choose it. It's not because we did something bad. It's oftentimes to create and generate something good. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun to unpack this. I think of all of the words that we're going to do, this is one of the most practical because it applies to so many areas of life.
You say that Solomon claimed that we should actually love discipline. And as we just mentioned, we don't normally do that. My question was, we're often disciplined when we've done something wrong and it becomes public knowledge. And it puts us in a position, I think, that really requires humility. So what does our willingness to receive discipline say about our relationship with God?
Well, discipline and disciple come from the same root word, meaning learner. Mm-hmm. So already it's switched to a positive. And what it means is that we've surrendered our heart or our will, similar to the way an athlete surrenders his or her heart or will to the coach. And so we're surrendering our hearts to a coach, and the coach is God, he's Lord, and we're saying, discipline me, bring me in, I want to learn from you. And we know that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and it says in that theme verse that a fool despises discipline. So Proverbs was written for discipline, and you know, it's similar to the most disciplined athletes, I think, in sports are race car drivers. I mean, one little flinch, a buddy of mine raced at Indy, one little flinch, and it literally can mean death, and not just death for you, but death for others. And when we're undisciplined, just think about putting an undisciplined race car driver on the track. I mean, when we're undisciplined, we're unteachable, untrainable, untested, big one there, and we remain untransformed. To give you kind of a picture of what I'm talking about on a learner and a disciple and discipline, how it all goes together, I want to take you to a charity auction I did in Boca Raton, Florida for the Boca Raton Community Hospital. And two of my largest customers, they were brothers, they were head of this fundraiser, and they asked me to come down. They said, it's going to be really cool. We want you to do this. We're going to do it in our airplane hangar, and it's going to be really decorated, cool. There's going to be a lot. It's going to be kind of a who's who. And you know what? We're going to have Rusty Wallace come down, the NASCAR driver, the cup champion. And he said, we want you and Rusty to kind of have fun. You just do your thing. And you have Rusty involved there. Well, it was really a fun night. And I just, I thought of something funny. It's kind of a sidebar. The way they opened the whole night up before I auctioned, they said, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like you to give a warm welcome to such and such, who has just made a gift to the Boca Raton Community Hospital in the amount of $20 million. And silence. And these are wealthy people. Silence. You could have heard a pin drop. And all of a sudden, they just erupted in this standing ovation. And this Chinese-American guy looks at me and he goes, he's sitting beside me. He was so funny. And he said, $1 million, I get, but 20 million, what's that? And so that's kind of the way the whole night was. So it's really exciting. We sold trips on jets. Rusty sold something to, and he did this all on the spur of the moment. He started adding things. He said, okay, you can be on my owner's yacht and you can be in my pit crew when we'll give you a can to hold or something at the Daytona 500. I'm looking at Susan, I'm going to buy it. But I did too good of a job that night and it brought like $30,000. So it was just amazing. They wanted to raise like, I don't know, 50, and we raised like 250,000.
His insurance company is going, Rusty, you can't be doing
that, right,
buddy.
In fact, I sold Rusty's uniform and he says, and Mitchell, I just want you to know that the most one's ever sold for is $18,500. So good luck. And I think inside he's thinking, you know, maybe it's going to bring $5,000 or $10,000. I got a lady to kick it off at 20, and I looked at Rusty and said, don't you ever challenge me again. You know, so anyway, here's what I want to tell you. The night's over, and I'm on my way out. And Susan and I are together with one of the brothers that brought us down, and a lady who had to be, I'd say late 80s, early 90s, looks at me and she's got a checkered flag in her hand and she says, Rusty, will you sign my flag? And the guy, now I don't look like Rusty Wallace. He's very handsome. So the guy I was with said, that's not Rusty Wallace. That's Mitch Cruz, the classic car auctioneer. And she looks up at me and she says, I bought a car at one of your auctions. I said, oh my goodness, do you still want me to sign your flag? She goes, I love the car. Yeah, please sign my flag. And I take the Sharpie that she gave me and I start to write. And I said, as Rusty or Mitch? And so she goes, Mitch. And what she said was, when she came up to me, she said, that guy over there, he told me, you know, that you were Rusty. Mm-hmm. So I'm walking out. We got all that settled. I'm walking out. And this man who I figured must have been her husband, the guy who sent her over. I mean, Lynn, the thickest glasses I've ever seen on a human being in my life. I mean, inches thick. And he looks up at me. And I'm heading out. And you could tell he's just full of personality. His hand goes up in the air and he goes, see you later, Rusty. Now, the reason I tell you that story is because I was seen with Rusty Wallace. Mm. Because I worked with Rusty Wallace. Because I did life with Rusty Wallace. People thought I was Rusty Wallace. God's designed it so that when we're seen with Christ, when we work with Christ, when we do life with Christ, that people see Christ in us. Mm. And that's the picture of discipline of being a learner.
All right. Well, let me just mention again that the worksheet for today's Mid-Morning is on our website at WBCL.org, and it covers really the basics and beyond, and you can also re-listen to this program at the website as well. Yeah, you've divided sort of our discussion into four main points this morning, Rich, and you use a Rich. You need to wear a name tag. You need to wear a name tag. I don't even know a Rich, I don't think. Anyway, straighten up. We're on the air. This is live. You realize this. There's no editing involved today.
You know what my grandfather says?
What?
He said, if I knew who I meant, and you knew who I meant. It doesn't matter what name I said. So there you go.
I'm going to remember that. All right. You say, as I'm reading from your well done worksheet, the key to this multiplication. Oh, let me back up. You write, when we make disciples, we know we have achieved success. This is really great. When those being coached are making disciples who are making disciples, that's the measuring stick of effective discipleship.
Yeah. Grandpa Russell used to say, your job is to get yourself out of a job.
And I hear parents say that, or people that speak to parents say the same thing.
Yeah, and I think in the church we need to think about this a little more, because we have a tendency to want to, you know, say, okay, you come here, and me, pastor role, I'm going to feed you for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And I think success looks like that person making disciples of people who are making disciples. I would continually challenge in our talks, and we talk about this at Blackhawk, where's the exit point? And it's tough. It's a tough thing to wrestle with. I'm not saying I got it all figured out, but when I learn things like this, like what we're going to talk about, it challenges my thinking on how I'm living my life. We're dividing it into four turns, like a racetrack, all right? And so we need to navigate all four turns. If we miss one of these four turns we're going to talk about, we're going to hit the wall of relational wreckage. So we're going to go turn one, turn two, turn three, turn four.
And let's work through the list very quickly. Teach, train, test, transform. And you say each turn must be navigated, or discipline does not make a full lap of wise conflict management, and the result is relational wreckage. All right, let's start with the first one, teach.
Turn one is teach. This is defined. I experimented with these definitions. I was working on this talk for one night, and a pastor at Blackhawk walks in, and I said, hey, sit down. He's got a master's in education. I said, let me just run this by you real quick. And he said, that sounds a lot like such and such. I'm sorry, such and such. I can't give you credit because I don't remember your name. But he said he went through a different talk on a different idea, but it was about disciples and Jesus's pattern. And so I thought, well, I'll experiment with those definitions for these four turns. And I kind of like them. So turn one, we're going to call teach, and it's defined as I do, you watch. Write it down if you can. I do, you watch. Something is inspired, modeled, and explained, and that something is retained. King Solomon believed that humility toward God, obviously, was the first step in being teachable. He said, the fear of the Lord teaches a man wisdom, and humility comes before honor. We humble ourselves to the person of God, and then we're teachable. If you just think about it, people who are not teachable probably are not even humble towards God. Teaches in that verse is translated from the same Hebrew word, root word for discipline, musar. Solomon communicated both the value and transferability of teaching. So I can transfer it. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Mom and dad to child. Child becomes mom or dad, translates to the next child. Instruction there is also translated from the same Hebrew word for discipline. Solomon taught that we prosper from this instruction or teaching, especially when we learn to trust God in the process. Whoever gives heed to instruction prospers, and blessed is he who trusts in the Lord. So this is for our benefit. He continued describing how the right word, spoken at the right time, with the right tone of voice, I fail at this tremendously, advances the teaching process. He said in Proverbs 16:21, the wise in heart are called discerning, and pleasant words promote instruction. We could say pleasant words promote teaching. Pleasant words promote discipline. The key blessing of instruction is that it makes us wise. Listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end, you will be wise. The problem is we don't shema. We don't listen. This is the single greatest challenge going on, I think, in this wisdom and discipline process, is we don't literally bend the ear, bend the knees of our heart, and listen. If we cease being teachable, then we will be led away from intimacy with God, only discovered through being his disciple. Listen to this. Stop listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. Knowledge is this intimacy with God. Jesus navigated turn one of discipline by teaching his disciples. He inspired, modeled, and explained his disciplines to the band of followers by living out wisdom in their midst. We should do the same with our children, our employees, and our teams. I can't help but talk about this and think about my dad. my dad was an auctioneer because his dad was an auctioneer, because my grandfather's father-in-law, my great-grandfather, used to clerk and cashier auctions, and he saw after my grandfather's farm had flooded, real close to here, by the way, he said, you know what, this happens about every 7 years. He said, you ought to be an auctioneer and have a little more consistency, you know, in your life and your income. So in 1952, he became an auctioneer. In 59, when my dad was a senior at Leo High School, my dad made a deal with the principal that he, you know, keep up his commitment to sports and his grades, and he could miss school frequently to learn and to, you know, grow as an auctioneer. And it really fit my dad's personality. My dad's very outgoing, very inspiring. Well, now here I come along. And so I'm 5 years old when kids were made to stay home and watch cartoons. And on cold winter Saturday mornings, my dad would get me out of bed and say, I'm 5 years old now. He'd say, you're not going to be lazy. He says, you're going to an auction. I said, what about cartoons? You're not going to watch cartoons. You're going to the auction today. And I'd get all bundled up and I'd go out there and here's what would happen. Dad was doing, I do, you watch. And all these images are just burned in my mind. And when I look back on it now, I think about all this auction experience that I was gaining by watching the master do his thing. And so what I want to encourage you today is parents, as managers, leaders, teachers, wherever you are in life, you can teach. You can teach your children. You can teach your employees. You can teach your teams first by being teachable. That's humbling your heart to God and actually being a learner yourself. It's said that the teacher learns the most. And then navigate turn one in Solomon's track of discipline by implementing I do, you watch. Inspire, model, and explain the discipline you would like to instill in your disciples. Select the right words at the right time with the right tone of voice, which I know is challenging. I want to say it again. I fail at this. But this has a huge impact when we do get it right. And, you know, if you're a coach, this would be, you know, explaining, inspiring model, explaining what you want to have happen on the court or on the field of competition.
I was talking to a friend of mine who is a step parent to adult kids, and he's really frustrated by some of the things that his adult stepkids are doing. They're not involved in anything illegal or immoral, but his feeling is that they're just making choices that are allowing them to sort of drift at this point in their lives, in their 20s, and that they're sort of staying in one place. They're working, and they're partying, and they're partying, and they're working at sort of the rhythm of their life, and he wants a lot more for them. And he has been talking to them for a long time and tried different tacks of talking with them, and it's not making any difference. And he's experiencing some things himself internally, some changes that he's made. And I said, you know, maybe this is the time to really not talk to them about it, but just to live your life really well and let them watch you do it. And then they're going to be so attracted to that because there's some changes going on in you that they know. But you telling them about your changes and you're telling them that they need to change is just making this whole situation really, really tense. It's making them hard toward you. It's affecting the overall relationship that you guys all have. And it's really what you're saying here. I do, you watch. And with adult kids, it's even more iffy because you don't really have authority over them anymore and you don't have power to tell them what they can and can't do. But he's got genuine concern for them and he really wants their lives to be different. They're not too interested in that right now. So I said, just do what you're doing because it's pretty attractive and they'll see the difference. And maybe you'll have the opportunity to say, you know what? I once was where you are now. And let me just tell you that where I am now is so much better. And if you ever want to hear about it, I'd love to tell you about it. That's the whole first step of this teaching that you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. And you're teaching me right now because I need to, I'm a talker. You know, my family is, we made our living on speaking, listening and speaking. And I think a lot of times I talk when I should just do. So I'm going to take that home, Lynn, and try to apply that.
Well, and I'm the same way because talking feels effective. You feel like at least you're doing something. Yeah. It's going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And not talking, just modeling, feels like this is really not having an impact. And it takes longer to bring change about, but really in the long run, you have a better chance of bringing change than beating somebody up with your words and the number of your words, because I can give you a large number of words.
That's huge for me. You're aware that I have a struggle going on, and I'm really struggling with I don't know. People tell me I'm gifted as a communicator, but I'm having trouble communicating in a way that's getting through to someone, and it's been really hard.
Yeah.
Really hard for me.
Because the stakes are high, you know? The stakes are high, and you care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think parents, anybody who loves somebody, relates very closely to what we've just said. So, yes. Turn number two is train.
If teach is I do, you watch, train is I do, you help. Training equips disciples with the tools to be successful. And I really want you to let that sink in. It equips the disciples with the tools to be successful. And so there really is no excuse at the end of the day for no training if we're doing our job by giving them the tools. It assimilates what is inspired, modeled, and explained into transferable skills. They're going to tell the next generation one step at a time. So in essence, training represents an apprentice program. Mm-hmm. Solomon offered the lasting benefit of establishing training early in the discipline process. He said this, train a child in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not turn from it. It was very interesting. At County Line, they've been doing a series on family. And I walked in Sunday morning and my brother's teaching on this verse in a family setting. They had all the kids there. It was powerful. And he talked about how training is this definition that we talked about. And he talked about in the way Hebrew the word for way in Hebrew is derech, and that there's this path. And he talked about how as parents, we try to force kids into certain molds. Now, there's no question here that this is a wisdom versus foolishness thing, but there's this argument that there's this unique pattern. You know, we say that this is all about a relationship. We'll say that Christianity is a relationship, but then we walk down a very religious road and we don't leave room for the unique expression of the same Christ in all of us. And so I would say that, you know, this is definitely relational. And so we look at how someone's designed to go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Now we read that and say, wait a minute, train a child the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart. But well, I know preacher's kids that go bad. You know, you start going down that list. Well, Stewie pointed out how this is a proverb, not a promise. And we've talked about it before. Proverbs is a pithy saying that means generally true most of the time. Well, let me just say that's nice, but I discovered in my life prior to 1992 when I had this awakening that I was on the foolish side of the coin, of the equation all the time. And it made a huge difference in my life of getting on the wise side of generally true most of the time. Solomon described this to be kind of a 24/7 training process in terms of discipline. It's in Proverbs 6, verses 20 through 23, if you want to read it. And contrastingly, Israel's king painted a bleak picture of those who lack training. It's in Proverbs 24. He paints this picture, said, look, let's look at this. Look how it all fell apart. It's because there's no training. It almost is this picture of the Indianapolis 500 before Tony Holman bought it, when it had been closed up during World War II, and there's weeds growing where the cars are supposed to go, and it's just this bleak, bleak picture. You know, Jesus trained his disciples by allowing them to help him live out his disciplines. They assimilated his training into a transferable message that changed the world. Just think about this. His job was to get himself out of a job. You know, humanly speaking, he moves on. They go. We must provide opportunities for our children, employees, and teams to help us. And I can't help but thinking about Dad. I do. You watch. He made me go to auctions when I was 5 years old instead of watching cartoons. And then it became I do. You help. Well, since you're here, I'd like you to carry clerk sheets. What's that? Well, it was this sheet of paper that had 14 transactions on it, and it would have a copy for the seller, a copy for the buyer, and a copy for the auction company. It was in triplicate. And I would carry, every time 14 items were sold, I would carry that sheet to the cashier where people would go and pay, and it was the accountability process that for every item sold, there would be the correct amount of money for that item. So, I'm carrying clerk sheets. I'm getting stuck in the mud. I remember the one time I couldn't even move anymore. This was on County Road 31 at a farm, and it was a big auction. I get stuck in the mud, and I can't move. I'm probably 5 or 6 years old, and up comes this group of Amish guys kind of laughing at me, and they pick me up out of the mud, and there are my boots.
I was going to say, did your shoes come with
my
you?
My boots are sticking in the mud. And so they put me up on a little trailer. They put my boots back on and get me going. Well, I was thinking about everything I was doing. I was a little bit like, was it the Pony Express? And they would wind, hail, sleet, whatever it is, they still came through. And I thought, wait a minute.
That's the U.S. Postal Service.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, that's me. I am the U.S. Postal Service. And this isn't fair. I'm getting paid $1 a day. And some days I'm freezing when it's all over and they're long. And other days are short. This is unacceptable. There needs to be some kind of incentive. You know, so this is, I do you help, I'm working. So I sat down with Grandpa Russell. I said, Grandpa Russell, he said, yes. I said, can I get paid for my dollar day? Yes. I said, but there's something I want to talk to you about. This is really hard for me because I was pretty sensitive and shy and stuff. And he said, what is it? I said, well, some days I carry a lot more clerk sheets than others. And I'm wondering if I can get 10 cents a clerk sheet. He said. Well, I think that'll be fine, because there'll be some days, you know, that you're going to only carry 4 or 5 clerk sheets. I'm not kidding you. I was good at math at an early age. In my head, all of a sudden, I go, ding, 40 or 50 cents. You got to be kidding me. This is ridiculous. So I find the urge. I'm shy. You know, I don't know what to say. I want to talk. I don't talk. And I'm getting ready to say, okay. And I'm listening. And he goes, okay, you got it. 10 cents a clerk sheet. And I'm thinking, some days there's like 40 clerk sheets. I'm going to make $4, four times what I'm making now. And so I'm getting ready to get up and walk away. And I look at him. I said, just one thing, Grandpa Russell. He said, what's that? I said, I want a minimum of $1 a day.
That's bargaining after the fact.
Well, we didn't make the deal yet. And he said, well, what about all those days? What about poor old Grandpa Russell? And all those days you're only going to carry 4 clerk sheets. Is that fair to Grandpa Russell? I said, I think it is. And he let me earn the $1 a day minimum plus at 10 cents a clerk sheet rate. You know, what was going on there a little bit? What do you think I had been watching? I've been watching the deal being made. And there was my opportunity of I do you help of the training was now kind of working its way into me.
Yeah.
And I just, whatever you're doing, you know, with your teams, with your employees, with your family, would you consider training? Mm-hmm. Navigate turn 2 of Solomon's Track of Discipline. I do you help. Initiate an apprentice program with your children, your teams, or your employees. Allow them to help you in the chosen discipline in order for them to assimilate what is inspired, modeled, and explained into transferable skills one step at a time. Yeah. In coaching, these are when we develop drills to train the desired skill set. We break it down, mm-hmm. and we have drills, and there's some repetition involved. And it's so cool, after we take it apart, when we put it back together, we see positive change. We see discipline assimilated into that person.
It's 9:37. You're listening to Mid-Morning on the WBCL Radio Network, and our guest today is Dr. Mitchell Cruz. Sometimes I call him Rich because that's my nickname for him. We say thanks to Canine Companion, 11652 North, 825 West in Huntington. We appreciate their partnership in ministry. I love this I Do You Help because it has the immediate application, but it has a lot of long-term benefit. You know, you mm-hmm. talked about everything happening in the context of relationship. Mm-hmm. Wow, what a difference. When I think about kids learning to cook, it begins with this very first one, I do you watch, mm-hmm. and then it moves into I do you help, and kids learn to measure, and they learn numbers, and they learn math, and they learn how to do all kinds of things just in those very simple things. But what happens beyond all of that is the deepening of the relationship, sometimes finding out, you know, who I am and what I love, developing a sense of competence, a sense of appreciation. I mean, there's so much that grows out of these four things that you're talking about, even just beyond the discipline component of it. I was watching a commercial the other day, and I know that we's are really big, and I understand we when it comes to, like, pretending you're boxing, and we, you know, if we're driving a car. It's a great game. And some people are even starting to exercise because we involves the whole body. There's a Wii Cooking, and I saw the commercial for Wii Cooking where kids pretend to be dicing and chopping. And my first thought was, why would you pretend to do that? You know, why would you have a game that allowed you to pretend to chop and cut and dice and put things in a bowl and make things, and when you're all done, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those things that you actually need to be physically doing.
Yeah.
You know, and it begins with the I do you watch and then the I do you help. And
I don't play the Wii anymore.
I think it's kind of a cool thing.
One night my daughter...
Did your daughter beat you?
Lily, 9 years old. Hey, Dad, we only had 4 games. Hey, Dad, come down. Let's do this. I said, let's do the bowling. That'll look really cool. I'm not kidding you. After I bowled 2 balls, I said, why is that ball not going where I'm making it go? And how you doing this? She cleans my clock. She goes, you want to play such and such? I said, I think it was tennis. I go, okay. I am going to mop you with the court. I'll try to be nice here. I might let you win. She beats me bad. Want to play the next sport? Sport 3, she beats me bad. Sport 4, she beats me bad. I'm thinking, I just got drilled by a 9-year-old. This is ridiculous. And I haven't been back since.
The new marketing tool, Wii, the instrument of humility.
That's right.
There you have it. All right. Turn number 3 is test.
Hey, why don't you practice what you preach?
Turn 3 is test. Translated, this is you do, I help.
Yes.
Solomon implied that discipline is a precious choice. He said, choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. Continuing with the precious metal imagery, Solomon observed the crucible for silver and the furnace for gold, but the Lord tests the heart. God tests us in order to refine us. God tests us in order to refine us. A refiner introduces heat to metal with the objective to draw the impurities to the surface of the crucible or furnace. The deepest impurities rise last, only after the most intense heat. Conflict is the heat that reveals our impurities or our mixed devotions of the heart. Impurities are mixed devotions of the heart. Conflicts when two objects attempt to occupy the same space at the same time. And that's the heat that reveals our impurities or our mixed devotions of the heart. Through the heat of conflict, God gives us opportunities to fail in conflict management. This testing makes us stronger and wiser by bringing our impurities or our mixed devotions to the surface. Discipline is God's tool used to fashion us into his disciples, revealing his character in us as he brings wisdom in our lives. An indicator of our level of discipline is evidenced in how we respond to praise. I mean, just look at this. Building on the refinement illustration, Solomon taught, the crucible for silver and the furnace for gold, but a man is tested by the praise he receives. We really need to be careful to give credit to God and others when we are praised, resisting the temptation to advance our selfish desires. Obviously, I see that in sports. Obviously, I've done it in sports. Obviously, it can happen to me after a sermon, after a message. You know, this really reveals who we are when we're praised for something that we've done. Jesus tested his disciples for the discipline that he had taught and trained by giving them a controlled environment to apply what they had learned. Remember, he sends out the 12, he sends out the 72. He's always doing this kind of thing. The intensity of experience packaged with the opportunity to fail brought the impurities of his disciples to the surface. And much like heat that refines precious metals draws imperfections to the top, that's just what was happening. Peter, Jesus' disciple, saw the value of this process. Listen to what he said. In this you greatly rejoice. He's talking about these sufferings. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may be proved genuine, authentic, and may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Testing our children, testing our employees, testing our teams by giving them opportunities to fail helps us discover the areas that need corrected. I don't know if you remember Al McGuire. He was the coach of the Marquette basketball team that won a national championship.
He's a commentator.
Yeah.
Yep. Very good one, too.
Yes. And he won that national championship. And I was at a basketball camp when I was a freshman in high school with my teammates in Wisconsin. And it was billed as the last basketball camp where Al McGuire would ever speak. And I didn't quite get what he was saying. But it's funny. I don't know if you've ever heard a phrase, and it like bounces around and continues to come up in your mind for years later. And it was this phrase. He said, one thing I'm struggling with, he had retired and they wanted him to coach in the NBA. He said, the one thing I've been struggling with, he says, I here's what I need now. I need the opportunity to fail. I need the opportunity to fail. And I thought, what's he saying? What after we look at all this, I mean, what do we think he's saying? He's saying, I need to be tested. I still want to grow. I still want challenges. I don't want it to be done on this side. And I think about how Dad did that with me. You do, I help. When I was pretty young and pretty shy, we get to the end of an auction and we're in the cellar of a farmhouse. And Dad and Grandpa Russell say, all right, Mitchell, you're going to auction. They hand me the PA system, the microphone, said, you're going to auction all these jars. I said, what? You're going to auction all these jars? I'm thinking, this is a sucker punch. It's one thing to say I can't watch cartoons, but to bring me here when I'm 5 years old or 6 years old and to tell me I'm going to auction? Oh, my word. I mean, I'm doing the clerk sheets. I just negotiated my deal. What are you doing?
And jars. Give me something that's exciting.
Yes.
So, I don't want ball jars.
So I look at him and I said, under one condition. They said, what's that? I said, I'll take the cord of the mic and I'll auction on this side where no one can see me. And you guys take the bids where all the bidders are because I don't want them to see me. And so I grabbed the microphone where no one could see me around the corner. And the bullhorn part of it's on the other side. And I said, quarter, who'll get 50 cents? 50 cents, now 75, a dollar. Anybody else want to give a dollar? Sold, 75 cents. Yeah! You know? Well, that was the beginning of you do, I help. Mm-hmm. And Dad took me down a process of auctions, you know, and later in life I would auction and he would help. I remember when I was probably 17 or 18 and I'm auctioning and he said, hey, I said, Dad, I don't know if you want me to do this. I think the sellers are going to be mad. You know, the sellers are going to have this big, when you put me up there and he says, don't worry. You call bids, and I'll talk as you're auctioning. I will help you. And so here's the greatest auctioneer in the world saying, I'm going to be right there beside you, and I'm going to help you. And I would call bids, and he'd say these great power phrases. And, you know, I did see sellers come to me and say, and think, oh, my goodness. Oh, why is he doing that on my car? Mm-hmm. But something happened. And it was Bud Ward from Arkansas. And Bud Ward's car was up there. And Bud Ward was known for the most beautiful paint jobs. And here's Dad letting his 18-year-old son sell Bud Ward's car. Restored just to the hills. Gorgeous. It was a 50s Cadillac convertible. And you know what happened? It sold. Because in a way, looking back on it, I think people wanted to help me, and I think the barriers were down. I think they trusted me. You know, what am I going to do? I'm innocent. And they bid freely with confidence in trying to help me, mm-hmm. and he sold his car. And this is going to lead to what we're going to talk about next, but Bud Ward came up to me about probably a couple years later, and he says, Mitchell, I just want to tell you something. He says, the first car you ever auctioned at an auction, mm-hmm. consignment auction, was mine. And he said, I'll be honest with you. I said, oh, my goodness. Why is he doing that? And he says, but Mitchell, I just want you to know something. You sold that car. And you sold every one of my cars that you've auctioned. And now I want you to auction every single one of my cars. I think that all came from the test. You do, I help. When we're coaching, we're teaching, we're showing our team, we're explaining to them, inspiring, modeling what the behavior we want. When we train, we're giving them the drills, we're breaking it down. When we test, that's a scrimmage. Mm. That's a test. They have an opportunity to put it all together and fail. So what I'm encouraging you to do today is to test. Ask God to test your heart for impurities or mixed devotions. When they arise, ask him to remove them. And in the same way, navigate your children, your employees, and your teams through turn three of Solomon's track of discipline. You do, I help. Just as in sports, the best test is a scrimmage, so we must hand them the wheel. provide them opportunities to fail. Do not panic when the impurities rise to the surface. I need to listen to this. Do not panic when impurities rise to the surface. Rather, rejoice, using it as an opportunity to get yourself out of a job by instilling discipline.
You know, that sentence, you just read it very easily. Ask God to test your heart for impurities or mixed devotions. This is painful business. When you ask God to test you, most often, as you were using this image of fire or heat here, Mitch, I can't think of a person I know or even in my own life. And just, you know, recently my prayer has been that the Lord would purify my heart and make me a humble person. And when you pray that sincerely, that isn't like a change that you wake up and that's who you are. It's experiences that move you toward that. And it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It just downright hurts. You may reach a point. I mean, I'll just give you, 2 weekends ago, I was at a retreat and I was speaking there and I prepared for it and was excited about going and had surrendered my heart and really been praying since June that God would have his way with all of us, that he would be, I didn't know who was coming, but he did. He would ready everyone's heart for what it was that he had to say and the unique work of the Spirit that, you know, when the words leave your mouth and by the time they hit everyone's ears, the Spirit does this translation that they each hear exactly what God wants them to hear. And Friday night, when I was off to the side getting ready to go out, I just felt like I had been abandoned. And I was so scared. And I didn't feel well. And it had been a long flight. And that was the answer to my prayer. I felt like the evening was a huge bust. And I walked off and sat in this room in the dark and cried and said, I'm not sure why you brought me here, but I trust that you're going to do something really great for your own glory. And if you need to humiliate me to do it, then I never thought I'd say this, but just having you in my heart and an awareness of you, that's the reward. So if that means that you're just going to have to, you're going to embarrass me and people don't like what I do, I can live with that. I can live with that. I can go down on that ship. And so I went back to my room and it was just a long, miserable night. I mean, I sat and sobbed in my room thinking, I have two more times to go through this tomorrow. But, you know, the next day, I moved to the stage. I've been praying most of the night, and I have never had an outpouring of the Spirit in such an amazing way. And it wasn't that the words I said were so great, but I saw the Spirit of God move. And I thought, that is what I really wanted. I prayed that he would be seen, but I tend to get in the way. Whatever happened that Friday night was the answer to my prayer to test my heart, the beginning of that. But so I say that to say, if you pray that prayer and mean that prayer, God is going to answer that prayer and it's going to be ugly for a while. I think it's going to be ugly for a while. I don't know that it happens in all the sweet moments of life. I don't think those things can do the purging that in a way that it has to be done in order for all that is yucky and sinful to rise to the top so that the Spirit can remove it from your life.
Wow. The most space in the Old Testament given to one guy, that one guy is David. And David's intimacy with God is exactly what you described. And so if you're listening today, I want you to realize that it's Lynn's humility and intimacy with God that unlocked that door. And here's what David's prayer is. You can look it up. It's Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24. And he says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts." Anxious is a divided heart. I got one foot in and one foot out with you, God. "And see if there's any offensive way in me and lead me in the way of everlasting." And when you do, it's amazing what God does in your life.
It is. And what it is himself. It is the gift of him. And so when you
there's
say,
nothing more.
I love this third one. You do, I help. You know, if it was just you do, and I'll help a little bit. Our only job is to be obedient. So that's my doing part. But the helping part, That's the bigger job.
Yes.
That's the work of God. So let's move to the fourth one, which I like it, but God will never do this. You do, I watch. he may be watching, but he's actively involved. We've got about 5 minutes for this one, Mitch. So turn four is transform.
It means correct. You do, I watch. So in the fashioning of metal, the refiner removes the impurities that float to the surface and continues the process in order to make the metal pure. The refiner knows that he has achieved purity when he sees his reflection in the metal. Christ knows that we are his pure disciples when we see his when he sees his reflection in us. This is most notable when we are making disciples who are making disciples through Solomon's track of discipline. Our job is to get ourselves out of a job. Navigating through turn four reveals Christ, the refiner, in us. Now, it can't happen by words alone. Solomon said, a servant cannot be corrected by mere words, though he understands, he will not respond. And there's at least three general approaches to correction: positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, and punishment. There it is, a subset of a subset. Positive reinforcement offers a reward for the desired behavior. Negative reinforcement removes an existing benefit for the behavior contrary to what is desired. And punishment brings consequences. It microwaves consequences for repeated undesirable behavior. And it's supposed to flow out of a heart of love. I actually said, I love you in times when I've punished. And I think it's really important. And Solomon actually juxtaposes that with hate when you don't bring discipline, namely punishment. And so we're supposed to love discipline, and we need to bring consequences. Short-term consequences are better, much better than a long-term crisis. Jesus corrected his disciples when they were missing the mark. He removed the impurities that floated to the top after they had been given the opportunity to fail. Remember this, discipline now is 3-to-1 formative to reformative. Correction is just one part of it. And according to Jesus' disciple Peter, transforming correction is positively received when it is preceded by teaching, training, and testing. Too many times we see teaching and correcting, mm-hmm. teaching and correcting, teaching and correcting, and we don't have the training, we don't have the testing. I ask a friend of mine, are you sure your son's going to be okay when coach such and such is getting in his grill? And he says, yes, because I know that he knows he loves him. And that's what's going on. So we need to really watch that. And how the person responds to discipline affects others. It's Proverbs 10:17, I think. It affects others. We either lead them astray when we respond to discipline, or we lead them to life, it says, the way to life when we respond to discipline positively. I think about what Dad did in my life in this, and I'll just say it quickly. I remember finishing an auction where I'd done well. And Dad leans over to me and says, you know what? You're the best in the world. And I grew up as a 5-year-old just wanting to hear that. And finally, you know, somewhere down the line there, you know, from his perspective, he thought I was the best classic car auctioneer in the world. You know, with my little girl, Lily, I went through this pattern. She's 9 years old, but when she was about 3, I got Laura Bandelier at Anchor Room. Gave me this little Bible storybook by Dr. Mary Mann Simon, an educator, PhD in education, the Young Learner's Bible Storybook. And you know what? I would read it. I do, you watch. I would read it, and she would just watch when she was about 3. I do, you help. When she was about 4, she'd kind of start finishing some of the sentences for me. And after we'd get through it, you know, and I mean, it's got like 60 some stories in it, and it would teach you like prepositions or different things with the teaching of the Bible. That's why I loved it so much. And I think it's what engaged her. You know, she'd start finishing my sentences, and we'd get done with it, 60 stories, and I'd say, well, you want to do it again? Let's do it again. And so then, you know what started happening? She started reading, and I started helping her with the words and finishing the sentences. And then finally, when we did it again, We read this probably 4 times over the course of probably 2 or 3 years of her life. And finally, what it ended up with was she would do and I would just watch. My job was to get myself out of a job. Now, fast forward that to dropping my daughter off at college. She's like a big Lily's like a little Megan. And I get home and I have this in my drawer. Thank you for walking across the room to me when I was 4 and teaching me about God and his son. Thank you also for not stopping there. I'm thankful that I have a dad who cares and wants me to grow. I'll miss being coached by you, not just in basketball, but in life. Well, you still made my coach in life. I just wanted to use that phrase. I'm really glad you were home instead of gone, working while I was growing up. I'm so thankful that I had two parents who involved in my life and loved me so much. Thank you for teaching me so many wise things. I know if I have a question, I can ask you and you'll know the answer or have a way to find it. Thank you for loving me through the good and bad. I hope to be able to prove my responsibility even more while at college. You'll always be my best good-looking dad. I love you and I'll miss you. Love, Megan.
That does it for today's Wisdom Works Mid-Morning, and we're so glad you tuned in today. Just a reminder that the worksheet is on the website. The audio will be there later this afternoon that you can re-listen. Or you can direct someone else who needs to hear what's been said this morning. They can find it there as well. Also, we're out collecting hams this week through Thursday, and those details are at the website at wbcl.org. We want to say thanks to General Credit Union for locations throughout Fort Wayne, Souder Village, and Archibald, and on the web at soudervillage.org. And we just want to thank God for this time together, sharing together and having the experience of Him being with us. He loves you so much and wants you to belong to Him. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. Money Life is next.